KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest String Summit, July 19th through 22nd at Horning's Hideout in North Plains, Oregon. The Northwest String Summit is celebrating its 17th year as a bluegrass, roots, and Americana music festival. Performers this year include Three Knights of the Yonder Mountain String Band and Green Sky Bluegrass. Other performers include Andy Hall, the Shook Twins, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, The Deer, Carolyn Cotter, and many more. Again, that's the Northwest String Summit from July 19th through the 22nd at Horning's Hideout, 21277 Northwest Brunswick Canyon Road in North Plains, Oregon. More information can be found at KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Everybody, you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Lady Monte coming at you with another episode of Bread and Roses. And oh my gosh, I gotta be raw, I gotta be real, I gotta be honest with y'all for a second. Both my guests did not work out. Oops, that happens. It's super live radio. Still waiting to hear back, so we might get some guests in later on in the hour, but I do like talking to y'all and I like talking to myself, so I think we can fill the time, and maybe y'all can help me fill the time. Maybe we can make this a call-in show. I would love to hear from you. I'd love to put your voice on the air. Go ahead and shout out that air room phone number is 503-231-8187. And today's topic, in case you're interested, it's hard for me to bring up because it's something that I want to know, and it's something that I want to know out of love, but it's still something I want to know. So that means it's something I don't know, which means it's not a part of my experience. And so that's what makes it a little bit awkward, wanting to talk about it by myself in a room instead of with people who are actually represented by this community. But I'll just go ahead and throw out the topic that I was intending to talk about and discuss on air. And it has to do with emotional abuse. And I'm really focused on right now, what must that feel like and look like and be perceived in what way by members of our community who are masculine. We hear all the time, and I'm also, you know, I'm a member of the female community, and as a female, I listen to my femme friends all the time, and it's just become so second nature to fold that experience in, to hear them talk about their experience of emotional abuse and what that looks like to them and how they struggle through it. And I'm well versed. Like, I've got a pretty good idea of what emotional abuse looks like and feels like to me. And I'm learning new tools every day to deal with abuse. But it's something that's hard, right? Learning those tools to how to deal, how to cope, and how to surpass and rise above. So if the problem itself is not being acknowledged, then there's no curriculum set. There's no need present to find an understanding. And so the finding is gone. you're just left with an unexpressed need. And that's sad. That's heartbreaking, actually. And I'll tell you why I'm thinking about this. I grew up with two brothers. And as an intersex person and as the only female in that house, I think I was pretty focused on my own problems. I had a lot to deal with when I was growing up. But I'm realizing more and more and more and more that my favorite menfolk ever, my brothers, were also dealing with a lot, so much. And I had no idea. I was pretty well convinced that I was the only victim in that emotional situation of our family. And it breaks my heart to think that I left them high and dry. I left them when they needed help from me, from their sister, from their femmes. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that to my family. I don't want to do that to my community. And you know, the thing is that I'm realizing is that they were using every bit of language that they knew how. They must do, because nobody suffers needlessly. Everybody expresses themselves authentically in their own way. And I understand that they must have been going through some pain while we were growing up together. But the fact that I did not perceive it until now is what was worrying me, and it's what worries me for the future, to be honest. And so I'm now on this mission. I'm sort of like honing in on my need to learn right now. Because I want to be there. I want to be there for men that I love, and for my friends, and for my brothers. Good Lord, I'd love to heal those relationships. I want to know how I can show up as a feminist, as a femme, as a sister for my brothers. So that's the conversation I want to have. If y'all want to have it too, call into the air room, 503-231-8187. Still not sure what's going to happen. We got, that whole YouTube channel with the lo-fi hip-hop beats to relax and study to. Y'all, just relax for a minute. Think about your thoughts and decide whether or not you want to call in. It's all up to you. There's no pressure whatsoever. I just want to let you know that I'm here and I want to have this conversation. And if anybody else wants to have this conversation too, just come on in. We're right here. 503-231-8187. All right. Chill, 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 chill.
Career? I don't know. I've thought about this quite a bit, sir.
All right, we're live. Caller, how are you doing? Can you hear us, caller?
You hear me?
Oh, yeah, there you are. Hey.
Lady, my friend, how are you?
Hi, Al. It's so good to hear your voice.
So good to hear you, too.
Thank you.
Great to see you on the radio.
And I got to let you know real quick.
I hear you on the radio. Anyway.
Yeah.
Can't see you.
I got to let you know real quick. Before you start spilling your guts, I want to be totally open and consent-oriented. Another friend of ours just walked into their room. It's Emmanuel, and I did a show with them yesterday, and they're really, really cool. I feel like some prayers are being answered right now. I got callers. I got a guest in the room. Oh, wait. How's that working?
There we go.
There you go.
Now I'm on.
I wasn't even looking at the buttons.
It's all good.
Cool. So, Al, what's this?
Who else we got in there?
That's Emmanuel.
Hey, Al. It's Emmanuel. Oh. How's it going, man?
Good. I don't know if I've met you before, but, I'm a volunteer down there.
Word. You probably haven't. This is only my third time in here.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Yeah. I work on the news. But anyway.
Emmanuel. I'm gonna catch Emmanuel up real quick. The topic for tonight. This is a feminist affairs programming, right?
Okay.
And as a female, I'm moving towards equality every and any way I can.
Word.
And that includes equity towards recognizing like masculine emotions. Like we were talking a little about this yesterday on some guy's show.
Okay.
And what I was just relating to with my story about my brothers growing up is that they had to have been going through so much pain. And as their sister, I didn't even realize it because we were speaking different languages.
Mm.
And so as a female, I feel it's imperative to learn. Like, what does emotional abuse look like? What does, like, a cry for help look like from a man? And, like, what can females do to help? You know what I mean? Like, because that's important. I don't want anybody to suffer in silence.
Word.
So that's what we're talking about. And that's what Al's calling about.
Awesome.
So go ahead, Al.
Well,
thank you.
I don't know how this totally works into it, but when I was growing up, my parents divorced when I was very young.
Okay.
And so I had no male influence. And my sister and mother kind of got this bond, but I was basically ignored my entire thing. Okay, so I was a man being, or a boy being raised by women, and with no male influence, and I was just made to feel invisible.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
And I don't know if this is a common thing, but I would bet you dimes to dollars it is.
Yeah. Well, invisibility hurts. It hurts.
You know, and you know, I didn't have a strong relationship with my father. I didn't have a strong relationship with my mother. And I wound up basically raising myself.
Mm. Yeah.
I had to learn how my mother actually turned into an alcoholic, and she was gone to bars, and I had this series of stepfathers and really tough, you know?
Yeah.
But, so, you know, I think I turned out good. You know me.
Yeah. So what hurt for you was, like, being invisible. You saw the solidarity between your sister and your mom.
True.
And you didn't...
It was.
You didn't feel any solidarity in that unit.
And now my mom and dad are both passed away.
Okay.
And I never had a chance to actually confront either one of them on this.
Yeah.
I had no closure on any of this.
Okay.
But at one point, I decided just to say, hey, you know what? You are somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't have therapy or anything else. I just said, you know what? I am somebody.
Yeah. Good. I mean, you definitely are. And it can be confusing when people act like you're not, you know? When people
and now I've got this great gregarious personality that, you know, I put on, you know.
Yeah.
I throw jokes out just at random, and I make people laugh all the time.
Do you have experience with this situation, Emmanuel? Like with divorce, or how do you feel about, like, single parent households being raised by an opposite sex parent?
Well, I mean, I don't have an experience like that. My parents have always been, they've been married for 30 plus yeah. years. Actually almost 40 years.
Wow, okay.
So yeah. I don't have any of that experience.
We were talking about that yesterday. Yeah. Okay, so maybe this is a good thing that you're here.
Yeah.
Cuz like you've got that sort of consistent and very healthy experience growing up yeah. and
the only thing that I can really speak to as far as single parenthood, I had a bit of experience with that.
Okay.
Just because when I first had my son, me and my now wife, we weren't married.
Yeah.
So we had him before we were married.
Yeah.
And then there was that point of switching off and going back and forth. So I felt what it feels like to be a single parent.
Okay.
And when your baby is crying for their mom and they're not there, like that's a helpless feeling as a man. Like I felt like nothing, you know. But then, so on his point, growing up and not having that male affirmation, like he probably felt like, and he said he felt, you know what I mean? So obviously with that lack of, you know, both parents being in the picture, like yeah. it just hurts. It's not the yeah. ideal situation.
So
the thing is, I wasn't even dealing with, I was dealing with no parents.
Yeah.
Mm. So my mother mom was wasn't
gone at bars all the time.
She was focusing on herself. Parents. Yeah. She was focusing on herself. So,
I was fighting for survival.
Yeah. Would you feel like your needs were not being recognized? And so I'm curious now because like this conversation is going to be about like what it looks like, especially for women, right? Because the story I related at the beginning of the story, at the beginning of the show, like I, as an intersex person, I went through, you know, female circumcision. I went through forced sterilization. I went through like doctor office rapes and stuff like that. And I went through my own abuse at the house. And so, to be perfectly fair, like females go through so much in this society, a lot. And so it's for me, I'm realizing now that I was focusing on that narrative because like I had to focus on it. But and that's kind of a human thing, is like being focused on your own issues. But if I had known,
much more tougher than what I went through.
Well, if I had known, well, that's Jesus. What I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Like, even I don't have any qualms. All right, I don't feel guilty for anything, but I still wish that I had had those tools to understand that my brothers were in pain, because I feel like we would have been able to reach out to each other through that time. I went through my pain by myself and they went through their pain by themselves, but we're a family. We should have been able to support each other. And I don't think that they recognized my pain language, and I didn't recognize their pain language, and so all of us went around not talking to each other.
Boys don't do that. You know, young boys especially, they don't recognize other people's pain.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah. So like how
that's the thing.
How do young boys wish that folks would recognize their pain? How do they express it?
They don't even acknowledge it.
No. Oh. Not at all.
Oh,
not at
man.
All.
Y'all are not making it easy. Yeah,
but look, we're socialized to not do it.
Yeah,
young
yeah,
boys
yeah.
like to inflict pain sometimes.
Okay,
you know?
So the violence. All right.
It's about being tough.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Yeah, a man. We all hear. Man got to be the toughest thing, you know?
That's what it's all about. Big boys don't cry.
Walk it off.
Yep.
Oh, you broke your ankle? Walk it off. It ain't nothing but a scratch.
Yeah. Is it helpful?
Yeah,
you
know, that's what we hear.
Is it helpful to get a more feminine sort of approach to pain and wanting? Is it helpful to want to be nursed and stuff like that? And like, oh, let me get you an ice pack. I'll get you a pizza. Or like, what kind of conversation would you like to have? You know, about your pain if you're in pain, instead of being told, don't acknowledge it. And also the type of support.
Physical pain I just deal with.
Okay.
But emotional pain?
Yeah.
I've actually learned to let emotional pain go out. I can cry.
Okay, that's really good. I'm happy for you.
Most guys, I'll never cry.
I just relearned how to cry a short while ago. It feels good.
But emotional pain, I will break down. I will cry like a, you know. I will cry like a fountain. You know, and that's helpful.
Yeah.
You know, the physical pain, I'm still that same guy. I hear the football coach.
Yeah.
You know,
walk it off.
You know, yeah. Don't be such a. I don't know if I can say the P word on.
No, definitely not.
No.
But you know the word.
Yeah. No, thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you so much. Like, and if there's anything I can, like, I want to say to heal your situation, like, I'll always be here for you. I might not know exactly like what you're going through, but you've given me a couple of hints as to what it looks like when you're in pain. And
hey, lady, I've gone through it. I'm 55 years old.
Yeah.
I've learned how to deal with it all.
Good.
And I didn't need therapy.
Hey.
Kept that money in your pocket, huh?
But, keep that money, get the grass.
But yeah, I've learned how to be vulnerable, which is really important, I think.
Right.
That's it.
That's
what it is.
That's what we love,
too. With a lot of help
too.
From people at KBU, too.
KBU's the best. Thanks for calling.
There's so many great people there.
Yeah.
All right, lady, I love you.
Love you, too,
we'll
Al. Bye.
All right.
Peace out, Al.
That was a really great call. What do you think, Emmanuel?
That was good. That was really good.
Thank you all for letting me get a little bit raw on the air, too. I don't normally talk about, like, my traumas, like, without a little bit of a heads up. But I'm happy to have that conversation. I think, and that's one of the things too, like, at least how I perceive it as a female, like when I'm talking to men about their pain, I know that like machoismo comes up, like you gotta be tough. I'm like, all right, homie, you wanna be tough? We'll talk about it. It takes toughness.
Right.
You know?
Like those emotional muscles are not worked out as a boy.
Yeah.
You know, coming to manhood and it's just like everything is kind of set, like you are who you are and you just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, but we got to do it.
What are some healthy things that you learned from your dad? Like, because I'm sure growing up, like you went through some hard times. You felt emotions.
Yeah.
Like, what did you do? Was it sports or was it games or what'd you get into?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I would say it's kind of what I touched on last night, like, when it comes to emotions and expressing that, I just didn't do it.
Yeah.
It's not something that I talked about. Even my dad, he didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
But I noticed that when I played football,
that
was like the biggest stress relief. Like being able to be angry.
Yeah.
To have the license to take out my anger on anybody. Like, I loved hitting people.
Oh.
Because I could leak, like I couldn't you like as a man, like that testosterone running through your body, sometimes you just want to hit people.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like,
I do.
When you get mad, I want to sock somebody in the face. I can't do that because I know I'll get in trouble.
Yeah.
But on the football field,
yeah,
I can do whatever I want.
That's chill. All right. So I'm beginning. All right. So my brothers were way into video games when I was growing up. But I'm beginning to see why now. I never got it. I think it was that aggression, that fantasy release, right? They're all about the demons and like the shoot 'em up games and stuff like that. And that's a really important concept that you just explained to me. I don't know if you realize you did, but the license to exert your aggression in an acceptable zone, whether it's on a screen, on a piece of software, or on a football field.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important for men. And I think it might, I don't want to make any assumptions, but I think that there's way too much fear of aggression these days.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel I don't want men to go around thinking that people are afraid of them just because they're large and strong and have like intense feelings.
But men have abused their power for so long.
True. Okay. Thank you for bringing me back to that. Yeah.
Men have abused their power and just let their aggression run wild.
Okay.
And now we're in an era where all of that is being checked.
Okay.
All the douchey manhood stuff that has been socially acceptable is no longer acceptable. All
right.
That's why we have the Me Too stuff. And that's why, you know, it's just like you just can't do a lot of what you used to do. And a lot of what we used to do, a lot of things that we were socialized to do was highly toxic. So that's why we had now have the term toxic masculinity. Because it's not that but there's like a blurring of the lines right now.
Yeah.
Because just you feeling like who you are in your natural state as a man, it's like, am I toxic just for being a man? You know what I mean? And the reason why we're so aggressive, especially when you're younger, it's like you have all that testosterone in that little body. Mm-hmm. And you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And your body doesn't know what to do with it and how to handle it. And you just want to get, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for talking about testosterone.
Word.
And well, because I'm on testosterone as part of my hormone replacement therapy.
Okay.
As an intersex person, I was born with like gonads inside my body that produced, yeah, they produced both estrogen and testosterone.
Okay.
And so as an intersex person, my body reacts differently to testosterone than yours does. Like I'm not bulking up and growing a beard or anything like that. Like this is my body.
Yeah.
But I still feel the psychological effects of testosterone now that I am prescribed it here in Portland.
Yeah.
And I have it prescribed to me. So I have to take the testosterone anymore, keep my hormone balance healthy in the way it was supposed to be when I was born.
Word.
But I feel testosterone for the first time, like, 3 years ago. Mm. And I remember when I first started it, like, I got horny and got angry a lot.
And you got angry.
Yes.
And that's just, and it's not that you're a bad person.
No.
That's just what testosterone does.
Yeah.
And so that's what, like, a lot of us don't realize. We really don't realize until we're older, like, how these hormones affect us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And even, like, and so especially, like, boys in a school sit-down classroom environment, like, with testosterone, like, that don't work.
Yeah, yeah.
We got to get up. We got to move around. Like, we got to do something. We're not going to sit still. So that's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's inappropriate, too. Like, who wants to cramp up, like, some middle schooler? Like, your body's developing and your bones are growing. Sit in this tiny chair for 8 hours
eight
a day.
Hours
a day. Like, oh, my God.
That's not going to happen.
No.
Yeah.
All right, cool. We're going to take a short break for a minute, chill on some music. Call back 503-231-8187. I'm enjoying the conversation. I want you to enjoy it too. Thanks. we just hit on something. Oh my gosh. Okay, so here's, I was laying down the situation. Here's my whole, all right. Because I'm wily and a female, there's always two reasons for why I do everything. And yes, it's for the greater good, but it's also because me. And what's happening in my life right now is that there's some men's folk close to me who, I don't know what's up with their situation, but I perceive their state to be, their state of emotions, their state of living, to be kind of just like, oh, I don't know. Are you sad? I want to help you. I want to give you pizza and scratch your belly. Like, that's what I want to do. And I, without going into too much detail, that was my perception, right? And I'm trying to think of all sorts of reasons of, like, why someone would put up with a situation where they feel like they're not being respected emotionally or whatever. And then Emmanuel said this.
Sometimes if you grew up in an environment where you weren't respected emotionally and that's the normal for you,
that
becomes who you are.
Yeah.
And so that makes you feel at home. And so if he grew up with that and then now he's living with some roommate, some guy who doesn't know that well, but that disrespect and that treatment, it makes him feel like himself. It's like, I know this.
Yeah.
I know this blanket.
You know, I know the anger blanket.
Yeah.
Yeah. People try and talk to me like I'm nothing, and it makes me so angry. Mm. But I kind of get off on it because now, like, I have this opportunity to be myself.
Yeah. And it's like your brain is rewarded with that emotion that's been firing off in your brain for so long.
Wow.
So when that emotion fires, like, ooh, I like this.
Okay.
I'm used to this. I'm accustomed to this.
Okay.
You remember when... Talladega Nights. Remember that
movie?
Uh-huh. I love that movie. When they were at Applebee's?
Yeah.
And everything was going great. And he was sitting down. His dad was sitting there with the mom.
He just starts ruining it.
And he just started ruining it. He's like, Dad, what are you doing?
Yeah.
He's like, man, I don't know, man. There's something about me. When things start to go right, I just feel weird.
Yes.
Even though it's right and it's constructive, that's not what he's used to.
Oh my God.
And so because he's not used to that, when stuff is going crazy, he probably grew up in a crazy environment, so when stuff goes crazy, he feels at home. Like there's a sense of like, yes.
All right.
This is more like it.
You fair. See what I'm saying? Yeah, I do see. All right, but what's a lady to do? What's a lady to do? So if I perceive that someone is in pain and that, you know, and by all intents and purposes, I've got like a list of facts that would probably make your life more facilitated. Mm. For example, okay, if you sleep, if you drink water, these things are healthy for you. And I guess like we're getting to a larger conversation too. Like how do you reach people who are, I guess, caught in that toxic cycle, whether it's an abuse cycle or an addict cycle or anything? It's, I mean, substance abuse is addiction. Is emotional abuse love addiction?
I wouldn't call it love addiction, but we do get addicted to emotions because they're just chemicals.
Okay. Chemical responses.
Chemical responses in our brain.
So what to do?
There was a song, I can't remember who sang it. Was it 3-6 Mafia?
Yeah.
It said, "Don't save her. She don't want to be saved."
Man. One time, all right, I must have learned this lesson 1,000 times. One time when I was working as a chef back in North Carolina, there is this dumpster kitty. And this is how I earned one of my nicknames, Dumpster Kitty.
Okay.
There is this dumpster kitty. She was a little scrawny, probably in her first year. But she wandered around the dumpsters behind this restaurant. She gets scraps and like she loved French fries. I always see her eating French fries. She'd just go after them. So I named her French Fry.
Mm-hmm.
And this went on for pretty much like the last 2 months of summer and fall. And we got to be good friends. Like, we were the only two females at the restaurant, me and Dumpster Kitty.
Yeah.
And so we bonded. I bonded. And then come wintertime, they're calling for a big storm to come blowing over the mountain. It's going to be like a hurricane snowstorm.
Mm.
Whoa, Dumpster Kitty, you going to be okay?
Word.
I scooped her right up. I put her in my Jeep. And I'm like, you're going to come home with me. Come on, it's going to be safe. We're going to be nice and warm. We'll cuddle. I'll get you a little flea collar. We're going to be inside the house. I'll feed you all the French fries.
Mm.
She seemed like she was okay with it until the car started rolling. And then she freaked out.
and got her a collar, got her a flea collar. I wasn't even going to get her a regular collar. I'm like, you're a dumpster kitty. You don't need a collar. Just like, don't be dropping fleas in my house.
Yeah.
But anyway, here's what happens. Here's what happens. Okay, get the dumpster kitty in my house. All the supplies. I see the storm blowing in. Literally can see it. It's windy out. There's snow blowing everywhere. It's dark out now. And I get to my house, and I'm like up on this mountainside, up in the woods on this gravel driveway. And so it's like, I got the cat, and I'm holding her in my arms. I'm holding her real tight. I'm like, don't go nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Man, she doesn't want to be there. Mm. She's like, where's my dumpster?
Right.
And she just launches. Right off, she leaves this big Wolverine scratch across my chest and like launches from my chest out into the dark night. And I'm like, oh my God. I looked and I called and I like took my flashlight, knocked on all my neighbors' doors, and they're all like a mile and a half apart in the country. And I was just like, y'all see my dumpster kitty? And they're like, what? And then by the time I'm done looking, it's like midnight and I hear owls hooting and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, dumpster kitty's owl food now. Sorry.
You think so? You think the owls got her?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. That's what all the men said at the restaurant.
Yeah.
I told them the story, too, and they're like, yeah, that cat's dead. I'm like, maybe she's just wild like me.
Yeah.
I don't
know. She seemed resilient. She lived in the dumpster. I don't know if the owls can get to her like
Thank
that.
You. You Thank you very much. It's a kind thing to say. Yeah. But, yeah, I guess I should learn that lesson. I'll just let it go.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't. You can't change people.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't want to change people. I just want them to snuggle with me.
Well... Well, then, I don't know. You might have to get him his favorite beverage and then see what happens after that.
Yeah. We'll see about that. Okay, cool. So, still looking for more callers. 503-231-8187. And we're talking about your emotions, fellas. We have Emmanuel in the air room right now. I'm Lady Monte. And yeah, I'm trying to be listening right now, so if I talk too much, you got some more stories.
but tell me this, what if a man is going to call in, what do you want him to talk about as far as his emotional learnings? Like, because we don't just talk about our emotions.
Oh.
Is there a specific story that you're trying to solicit? You know what I mean?
Okay. Listen up, callers. listen up, callers. Call in, please, with a story about the last time you felt upset and didn't say anything because you thought that your emotions would be taken negatively.
Mm.
Do you have one of those stories?
Last time that my emotions would be taken negatively. I gotta think about that.
Okay, yeah. Because, I mean, I've been there too. Like... I got stories about like getting triggered from PTSD and of course like growing up and stuff like that. Like sometimes people don't want to hear it. They're like, oh no, I'm not down with this method of communication. Like it doesn't matter if you have no other way to say it. Like, so I don't know. I kind of feel that struggle. And if y'all are going through that as well, like being perceived as dangerous and perceived as abusive, like I want to be able to explore like a different language.
Yeah.
So yeah, if anybody out there has ever been afraid to say what's in their heart because they thought it was going to make them sound like a monster, call in. You're in good company. I'm here. I'm definitely a monster. I got like rocks and bones and stuff tied around my neck. It's all good.
I'm a little scared. I'm not going to lie.
I'm intimidating. 503-231-8187. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I found a really cool TED Talk by Dr. Timothy Golden. I hope he's golden, I'm sure. It's the name of the TED Talk is called Suffering and Silence: The Emotional Abuse of Men. And that was just up in Walla Walla. It's about 17 minutes long. So if you hear something and you want to talk about it, go ahead and call in. We'll pick up and we'll put you on the air, and we'll probably pop in and out just a little bit to discuss what we hear. 503-231-8187. I hope you enjoy.
Human beings simultaneously inhabit two worlds. The first of these worlds is seen and external. It is the world of our five senses, the world of sights and sounds and all that whistles and goes bump in the night. This is the world of physics, where life is somewhat predictable. I often tell my students that no one breaks the law of gravity, for if you try to break the law of gravity, chances are the law of gravity will break you. Instead, we find ways through the manipulation of mechanistic, inexorable natural laws to comply with the laws of gravity so that when we fly in an airplane, we do so with some ease and arrive at our destination safely.
There's that licensure.
The second of these two worlds is internal and unseen. It is the world of our thoughts, our emotions, and our feelings. We have a bad habit of what we see and ignoring what we don't see. And this habit becomes especially problematic when we consider the fact that what is unseen and thus important, or I'm sorry, that what is unseen and what is neglected is often what is most important. For example, if all of the oxygen were sucked out of this room right now, all of us would see how important it is, but we do not see oxygen. Tonight, I want to tell you a story of a man who lived long enough to know that what was unseen and important, that is his inner life, the life of what the Greeks called the psuche, or the soul, that though so important to him, this life was neglected, terribly neglected. Neglected by his spouse, neglected by the larger society, and neglected to such a degree that it led him on more than one occasion to the point of considering taking his own life. As you listen to the story of this man, I want you to think very carefully about the men in your lives. I want you to think about your fathers. I want you to think about your husbands. I want you to think about your brothers, your uncles, and your nephews. This man begins his life in a household that some might rightly call hyper-masculine. He grows up the youngest of seven children in a home with three brothers and three sisters. He affectionately calls himself the tiebreaker. And growing up in a household with a father and three brothers was sort of like growing up with four fathers. And growing up in a household with a mother and three sisters was sort of like growing up with four mothers. And this household was, by today's standards, I would venture to say, rather chauvinistic. The men had more important things to do than cook or clean. after all the men had to watch football on Sunday. And as this man's father saw it, it was the task of the women to tend to the men and make sure that they had food to eat while they watched the game. And one of the cardinal rules in this man's household was that men were never supposed to cry. Men were never supposed to show emotion. Men were never supposed to cry or show emotion, because to do so was to demonstrate to the rest of the world, which, by the way, was always out to get you, that you were weak somehow. And in a strange sort of way, this man grew up in a household where he never once saw his father cry. Now, as he grew up and moved through high school, this hyper-masculine mentality sort of served him well. He excelled on the football team in high school and bears the distinction to this day of being the only male in his family who played on a football team that actually won a league championship. And through all of the challenging practices in the hot summer sun before the season started, and through all of the bumps,
what you thinking?
So, just listening to him talk, and just thinking about what it's like growing up.
Yeah,
we just don't know. No one has modeled what it looks like.
Okay,
to be emotionally intelligent as a man, as a boy.
Yeah.
We don't have any examples. Like, who do you know? Like, you know how we get taught as kids, on TV, through media. We get taught by our teachers, which are mainly women in grade school.
Yeah.
And then what society teaches, and what I was talking about last night, that breadwinner mentality.
Yeah.
The breadwinner type of guy is the one that's celebrated by men and women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I think you're a great guy. Like, yeah. And then
I appreciate that.
I'm sure your wife does too.
Of course.
Like, I'm wondering, like, have you felt yourself grow emotionally or with your emotional expressions since, like, you've been married or been a dad? Or
definitely. All of that. All of those life events. All of those greater connections that have been built over the years, and just like marriage does something to you. To be honest, though, the greatest change in my emotional composition has been my children.
Yeah.
Like that extra extension of yourself. Like, I didn't know what I was capable of, or I don't know if that means anything, but like, or what that means, but like, emotionally, when my kids hurt, I hurt.
Okay.
I experience emotional pain when they're in physical pain, and I didn't know that I could be affected in that way.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do with it except cry.
Oh.
And it's weird. I'm like, I have. So now it's like, as I get older, and I have these, and my children, my son, my daughter, and my wife, is like, there's so many things to be emotional about.
Yeah.
And before it was just me, and it's just like, I don't, you know, it is what it is.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah.
I'm doing good. I'm learning.
Are those emotions, like, so growing up, like, men are told when they're boys that there's no place for emotions in your life. There's no.
It's not that we're even, sometimes we're told, I think we're told through the media and through, like, just among boys.
Yeah.
Like, boys will just kind of socialize themselves in that way.
You just understand that there's no place. Yeah.
Exactly. It's not that my dad ever told me don't cry, or he wasn't hard on me. I mean, I think my parents were hard on me, but it's like, they weren't saying don't cry or don't this, don't that. To be honest, maybe my sisters were like,
yeah,
you can't be crying. You supposed to be, you know what I mean? So it just happened.
Did you ever feel like you were being cut off from something when you had this understanding, or did you feel like more you were reaching towards something? Like, did you felt like you were being kept from expressing your emotions, or did you feel like those emotions are just weird? No, I don't need to talk about them.
I
gotta focus on something else.
Yeah, I don't feel like I was being kept from it.
Okay,
but it was It's just kind of like when you're a kid, like, stuff happens.
Yeah.
And as it happens, it just happens, and you don't really know why or the reason why. Like, I, you know, as a young kid, I wasn't analytical about stuff. It was just like, it happens, and then you adapt.
Mm-hmm.
And you live, and you grow, and you, and then so you really don't realize what was going on until you're an adult. Or especially when you have kids, then you really realize what was really going on when you were being raised and why your parents treated you a certain way and talked to you a certain way and disciplined you a certain way. Like, once you have kids, you understand the rhyme and the reason of all that stuff that happened to you as a child.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff I didn't even think about until I became a father. And it's like, oh. And then me and my dad's relationship became a lot better.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Especially because my dad was hard on me.
Yeah.
So, and we didn't have a good relationship from like 14 on up. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? It was yeah. just like you butting heads.
Too much testosterone.
Too much testosterone. That newfound testosterone. You can't tell me nothing. But then I valued him so much more when I became a father. I was like, man, actually, my dad was great. As many things that I had like against him or whatever I thought about him at the time when I was going through it, like, he did what he had to do, and there's no manual on parenthood, so you just do the best that you can.
There's an e-manual on parenthood.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
You said it. You said it. I had to.
That was a good one.
Thank you.
You're very, very quick with that.
I'm a poet. But, yeah, no, there's no manual. Right. And now that you have found, now that you found this language, or at least you found a pathway to this language, mm-hmm. how do you feel about the fact that there's still no manual?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, all you can do is do your best and be cognizant of how you're raising your kids.
Yeah.
And so now I'm really just in the last maybe year or two kind of realizing that I was kind of repeating the same patterns of what was happening when I was coming up. And I am hard on my son.
Mm-hmm.
And I do coddle my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to be mad at my dad because the girls, I mean, my sisters had it easy and me and my brothers had it hard. But then I see why.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you kind of have to be tough on the boy because you want him to be a man and be a protector.
To use that strength in an appropriate way. You
yeah.
have to go run amok with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to be a protector. And sometimes, and I don't know, it's kind of hard to balance. But what I'm trying to say is, when it comes to my son, I do need to ease up.
Okay.
He's only 9. He just turned 9. You know what I mean? And so it's just like, and my wife, she's always been kind of, Emmanuel, look, don't, just calm down, just look, it's okay. And I'm like, no, he can't do that when he grow up, blah, 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 you know. And so a lot of it is we're trying to protect our boys from being exposed to what it's like to be treated as a man, for real, for real. So I'm gonna treat you like a man before you really become a man.
Safe zone,
so you know that these are just the consequences here. In the real world, it's not going to be no mercy.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that's some good insight. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, no doubt.
We're going to go back to Dr. Golden.
Word.
The first time he understands what he heard all of the women in his church say for decades, which was, I'm in an abusive relationship and the church can't help me. Now, for the first time, this man who had been taught his entire life to ignore the way he felt, he understood the plight of women in a way that he had never understood before.
Hashtag feminism.
All the church could do was tell him to stay married and work it out. And then, fortunately for him, there was one small church about 2.5 hours south of where he lived that provided him a place through a small men's group to share how he was feeling. And he discovered that he was far from being the only one who experienced what he had been experiencing for so long. In fact, as he engaged other men in conversation.
No, and that's always the case when abuse victims start talking out loud. That's another reason why I wanted to have the show and just like start talking about it. I'm really happy we had that first caller at the beginning, because talking about abuse is really, really scary. It's very, very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Especially when there's like power dynamics involved, like for example, like a father-son or a mother-son situation, or just whatever. Because especially with emotional abuse and psychological abuse, like that feeling is created that you are worthless and what you have to say doesn't matter and you're crazy. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's having that support group, having that community out there, and we missed the part about how he found himself at that support group, but I don't know, if you feel like you're going through something, talking helps. And then, because I've learned this lesson so many times, like if you feel like you need to say something, chances are like other people are thinking it, you know what I mean?
Definitely. It makes me think about, that's crazy, I kind of take it for granted, but like coming up, you know, in the church, like we had life groups, you know, for people of whatever age group, and it's always like, you know, males with males, females with females. But like in our life group, coming up in high school and throughout my college years, it was a good 10 to 12 of us, and we had that every week. We go and we talk about our struggles and our problems, you know, and whatever we were going through. And I remember it would be times where like I'll be kind of scared to say what I want to say. And then I say it, and it's like four or five people like, man, I'm going through the same thing, you know? So it's having those safe spaces and having that community is everything.
Yeah. Well, on that note, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, this is a safe space, and we're a community. I love seeing your face.
Already.
Coming up next is going to be Hard Knock Radio, today's news from a hip-hop perspective. This has been Lady Monte with Bread and Roses, and my guest, Emmanuel. What's your last name, Emmanuel?
Williams.
And they got that really cool podcast.
Oh, yeah. Socks and Sandals podcast, man. Check us out. We on iTunes, SoundCloud,
Stitcher. I just followed him on SoundCloud. I'm excited. Thanks again for being here. Y'all stay put. Have a good evening.
Peace out.
That as a result of something I've said tonight, someone, some man, somewhere, somehow, some way, will cease to suffer in silence, because someone has listened in a way that has allowed them to be touched by the story, not necessarily of themselves, but by the story of the men or man in your life. The aim of tonight's talk is to raise awareness and to bring attention to what is so often neglected, that is to say, to the inner life of a human being. I'm confident that if we give the inner life of a human being this sort of attention, that men and women will no longer have to suffer in silence. Thank you.
One, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before. Never been done
in this
before.
Country.
In this country.
KBOO Portland.